Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am the control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net. The net has been going strong for over 44 years. Every Sunday night, we find ourselves in front of our radios, chatting with each other, informing each other, learning from each other, and hopefully entertaining each other. And I thank you once again for joining me this Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do it all over again. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual links. If you would like to reach me by email, that would be for mailbag questions, for TechNet puzzles that we find to be very, very scarce but very valuable, or if you have expertise in a technical field that is in the news and would like to share it with us, or if you would like me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him to take a look about some NASA space-related story, of course, you can contact him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. My email address, for the purposes of this technical net, is mailbag@ac2gs.com. As everyone should know by now, every week I cut and paste a bunch of interesting articles, put it on a link page, and that's available 24/7. To get to it, just type into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll give you the link page, and it'll be up for almost ever. So if you have a case of insomnia and you would like to see some interesting articles, at least the articles I found interesting, take a look at it at your leisure. We have a chat room available. Sometimes it's busy. Lately it's been kind of quiet. To access that, you type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com. We offer an audio stream on the internet of the technical net, and I leave it open the rest of the week so you can listen into the Glen Oaks repeater activity through the internet. Access that, type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll give you access to this audio stream. I also always like to remind people that Mike, KC2NJI, has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv. And he has archived the Limark Technical Net that goes as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of people who've moved out of the area or unfortunately become silent keys over the ensuing years. Let me drop for a second and I'll tell you what we got planned. Okay, I have a short series of comments to make about AI at the top of this net, and then we will quickly switch over to our first major segment, which is questions and comments and topics. I'll ask people to check in by hitting their push to talk, giving me their call sign, their first name, and if they have a question or a comment, if it's amateur radio related or non-amateur radio related, and we'll put down the list. And we'll try and go from the top to the bottom. Sometimes we make minor adjustments. If some people came a little late and they're a little rushed for time, a lot of the other people are more than happy to make room for them. That should take us approximately to 10:15. Paul, WS2Ed, will join us for the SpaceNet report. That should take us approximately to 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So that's the plan. If the laws of physics continue to work the way I understand them, and my shack works, and the repeater works, and I don't get kicked off of All-Star too many times tonight. So that's the plan. Let me drop, and I will return with a short bunch of little comments about AI. There hasn't been a lot of revolutionary designs or announcements on artificial intelligence in the last week. It tends to be an evolutionary process. But I did find a very strange new artificial intelligence agent. It's not from a big company. It's a small research lab type of thing. And it's not particularly the most brilliant AI in the world, but it is a novel a change in concept for AI. If you've ever experimented with artificial intelligence, it tends to be a kind of question-answer. You ask it a question, it gives you an answer, and then it sits there and pauses. Most of it is text-based. This particular version is voice-based. So you speak a question, you get an answer, but with a difference. For some odd reason, the people who designed this artificial intelligence do not like silent pauses at all. And so their AI will blather on and on tangentially, like you've been on the worst date you ever had. I found it very weird, because the AI just kept on yammering, and I repeatedly suggested that silence was golden, but it didn't get the clue. If you are curious of playing with this, you can find it at a website called sesame.com. That's sesame like the seed, sesame. So sesame.com. Try it out. Talk to it for a little bit. And if you have any insight into it and want to discuss how annoying it is, feel free to come back some future Sunday night and we can chat about it. I found it an intriguing take on AI. Anyone with any comments before we go to the main segment? Okay, maybe after a few of you have tried out Sesame and have an opinion, you'll have something to say in some future episode of the Technical Net. We are on into the main segment, which we're asking for questions, topics, comments, preferably amateur radio related, but we will discuss any science and technology related subject as best we can. So with that in mind, hit those push to talk buttons and ID yourselves and get on the list.
DC Amateur Radio.
N2XN Amateur Radio related.
Alpha SO2 Yankee Golf.
Rich, Wes, and Sam recognize. Let's see. Sam, I would assume you don't have a very long question. So, Rich, do you mind, and Wes, do you mind if I take Sam first?
Not at all. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Thank you, gentlemen. Well, the question of the night is, how's the signal? This is the first time I'm using the Diamond 300A vertical, and this any tone, what do they call it, 738 or whatever it is. So how's the signal?
You sound fine, Sam. You're full quieting the repeater.
Thank you very much, and gentlemen, I'll be listening.
Okay, I knew you were going to be short, Sam. I didn't quite know that short, but enjoy your setup. You're sounding great. Rich, what do you got for us tonight?
Good evening, Roy. Good evening, everybody. I've got two confounding problems that I'm trying to deal with. The first one is I have a 2 meter 440 vertical, and I like to listen to ATC out of Boston. That's air traffic controllers from Boston. And what I did was I had about 20 feet extra of coax in the shack, and I wanted to trim that to, you know, what would just reach my radio. So I did that. I cut the 20 feet off, soldered a PL259 on the end, and attached it to my radio. I'm talking on that antenna right now. What happened was I no longer could hear Boston. I could barely hear the airplanes, which usually come in like a 10 over, 20 over S9, and I can't hear the air traffic controller anymore. This is just from trimming 20 feet off the coax. Does anybody have any idea what could the problem be? Go ahead.
Okay, well, I already told you my idea, but I don't want to squelch any creativity on the part of our listeners. So I'll give everyone out there an opportunity to voice their opinion and give suggestions, but I will step in eventually and tell the group what I told Rich earlier, what I thought was going on. So anyone out there with any advice, feel free to hit that push to talk. Gosh, I was expecting at least one or two people with some suggestions. Maybe they walked away for a beverage or something. So I will put in my two cents and then again give people the opportunity to come up with their own bright ideas or opinions or suggestions. What frequency are the air traffic controllers, Rich?
It's solder connection at the coax. 136.000.
Okay, so you try to use the antenna off frequency, right? Because your the 2 meter portion is cut for 144 to 147 or something, 148. You're trying to get your antenna to work off resonance. Now, what I was mentioning throughout the week is that some antennas that are off-resonance when you have an off-resonance antenna, you don't have the 50-ohm impedance, so you have an SWR. And as you change the length of the transmission line related to to wavelength, you will get a rotation of the impedance to the point where it's possible for antenna tuners that could not tune that particular impedance can now tune them. And sometimes the front end of your radio's receiver can pull out some amount of energy that it couldn't with a slightly unrotated impedance. So what I suggested to you at the time was to probably take the 20 feet of coax that you now have surplus because you cut it off your transmission line and put connectors on it, put a coupler on it, and add back approximately the 20 feet of coax line. And if that was what was causing the change in the impedance and the change in the reception, by adding the 20 feet back again, you might be able to rotate the impedance and get the signals back. So did you ever try to turn that extra 20 feet of coax into a jumper and connect it in line with your shortened transmission line?
I haven't tried that yet. I don't even know if I have two free PL-259. But what gets me is I'm on it right now, and it hasn't deteriorated. I don't think it has. You know my signal, Roy. Has it deteriorated my signal? Do you notice any change from my usual signal? Go ahead.
You don't get it.
No. Did someone want to say something? I guess not. No, but you're talking about apples and oranges. Your antenna is designed for 2 meters, so it shouldn't be affected at all by the length of the transmission line. It's theoretically feeding a 50-ohm impedance. Any fraction of a wavelength is going to give you the exact same impedance because it's not a mismatch. When you're trying to tune the air traffic controllers, it's a mismatch because you're not trying to get a signal that's 2 meters. You're trying to get a signal that is lower than that. So that's why I think it's just happenstance that the length of your transmission line got you into a sweet spot as far as the front end of your receiver. And when you change the length, you ruin the sweet spot, and you decrease the amount of power transfer into your front end. But that none of this affects a tuned resonant antenna. The distance between the transmission line, other than attenuation losses and such, is the only thing affected for a tuned resonant antenna.
When I throw on the nano, I get a result that's sort of unreadable. And somebody chimed in just now and said that it might be the PL259 that's not soldered on correctly. And I was thinking that continuity test between the outer part of the 259 and the center part of the 259, and I didn't get continuity, so it acts like it should act, where then the shield and the center conductor are not connected together. So if they were, and I got some connection between the shield and the center connector, then I would know what the problem is. I even tried to unscrew the PL259 so just the center connector was connected to the radio, and that didn't change anything either. But if the outer braid and the center connector are not connected together, doesn't that mean that the connector is wired on correctly, or what am I missing there?
Okay. Well, not necessarily, but what kind of would indicate that your connector seems to be fine is that you're talking to me right now. There is no frequency-dependent screwing up the connector. So the connector is most likely working fine, I guess. The thing that strikes me as the most likely is the impedance function of a length of random transmission line. Some old-timers on 80 meters will kind of tell you that, you know, all the transmission lines should be, you know, multiples of half wavelengths or something. That's not true. But it all myths, there's a kernel of truth, which is, again, that sometimes if you're feeding into a non-resonant antenna and you're using, especially an antenna tuner is the story I like to give, there was a time where I could not tune up a 10-meter antenna using my antenna tuner. When I put an extra 3 feet of transmission line to rotate the impedance, the new impedance was easily tunable by my antenna tuner, and I could get on 10 meters. So it was just making the transmission line longer. That will work if you're using a non-resonant antenna that you're trying to force into action, which is what you're doing. You're trying to use a 2-meter antenna to listen to, to what? To 2.5 meters, 3 meters? I'd have to do the math. But the fact that you're talking to me right now would indicate that your connectors are working and your transmission line has no discontinuity. You could have an open reading from the center to the shield, but you could damage the transmission line at some distance and have a discontinuity so that it doesn't transfer power to the antenna, but still your continuity test would read you the same thing. So it's not necessarily that the continuity test worked out and now, you know, there's no problem, but if there was a discontinuity or a short or an open, you wouldn't be talking to me right now. So I don't think that that's the problem.
it possibly be that the only thing coming into play and talking to you right now is that the only thing connected is the shield?
I do not understand what you're talking about. I would assume, like all things, you basically have your antenna wired the correct way. You don't tell me your shield, that the center line isn't connected to anything.
Flying this operator.
There was another station in there, or was that just propagation?
It wasn't the propagation, but it probably wasn't another listener. So you can move on. You don't have to respond to him. He hasn't identified himself once.
Okay. Could it be that either the center conductor or the shield is not connected, but not that both of them aren't connected. Let's say just one of them is not connected. That's enough to get my signal into the repeater?
No, it's connected. Again, if the transmission line wasn't connected correctly, you wouldn't be talking to me. You're doing a lot more here than you're doing with the air traffic controller, because obviously you're not transmitting on that frequency. But in this one, you're throwing, I don't know, 10, 20 watts down a transmission line. If you throw power down a transmission line that has discontinuities, not only would I not hear you, but you might, depending upon the safety circuits in the radio, might screw up your radio. So, no, I think your transmission line is fine. I think your connections are fine. Again, I think it's a matter of impedance mismatch and the lack of that 20 feet of jumper cable. If you bought yourself probably a 20-foot jumper cable with a coupler, you probably would rotate your impedance back into the point where you could hear the traffic controller. I can't guarantee it because not all coax cables are created equal, but most likely you would.
But how does that work? You're almost saying that the coax is almost being used as a counterpoise. Is that correct?
No, it's not being used as a counterpoise. It's being used as a kind of pseudo-impedance transformer. We've probably talked in the past about this, that sometimes a length of non-standard 50-ohm coaxial cable, 75 or 400-ohm open line, are used to transform impedances from one end to the other end. In this case, you're not really transforming the absolute impedance, but you are rotating it. Impedances are actually vector numbers. They have an absolute value in ohms, but they also have a how many degrees they are. So as you go down a transmission line, a coaxial cable, the degrees rotate over 360 degrees as they go through the transmission line. And depending upon the length in terms of wavelength, you've rotated the impedance a certain number of degrees that might just be a sweet spot for the circuitry in the front end of your radio's receiver when it comes to the air traffic controller frequency.
But the mismatch that you're saying is occurring now, I think at those high frequencies, the jump from 144 to 136 isn't all that great. And so why is the mismatch critically affecting one type of signal and not the one going into the repeater at Middle Island?
Comment.
You might not think it's enough, but trust me, it's enough. I mean, just think in other bands. If you, especially HF, if you don't have your antenna kind of tuned for the portion of the band that you like, if you're at the opposite end, your SWR could be 10 to 1 or more. So you might not think of it as too far away to be that much of an impedance mismatch. You know, unless you run a VNA on it, you won't know, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's more than 10 to 1. So, you know, you try into to listen to something and you're off frequency. You know, I don't know what to tell you other than that, because that, again, that seems to be the most obvious reason. Everything else doesn't quite make sense when you're relating it to the fact that you're talking to me. So obviously, it seems to be a frequency-related phenomenon. There's next to no other reasons for a frequency-based phenomenon. And again, I don't think your transmission line is broken and magically you're able to transmit and have me hear you on 2 meters.
Comment.
Yes, please, comment.
Good evening, Roy. This is KD2UH. Two quick things. What the station is talking about, and I'm sorry to catch the gentleman's name, but, you know, we're talking about he's transmitting to a repeater, okay? And in the other way, in effect, he's listening on simplex because he's listening to frequencies. ATC is generally anywhere between 123.9 or 119.9 to 136, and the upper band, upper part of that band is for air traffic control. So perhaps because he's listening on a simplex type reception, and you know the weather conditions do change and do affect, because I do listen to all that stuff myself. I've noticed that as well. So I don't think it's a transmission line. And until he gets a chance to figure it out, there is an app on his phone, it's called Live ATC. If he gets that little app, he can listen to both sides of the conversation anywhere in the world. You can pick the section of the world. I'll let it drop. You can pick the section of the world, the airport, which frequency of air traffic control that you want to hear. It specifies the frequency as well. So it's in this era of ILRP and Echolink and everything else, it's not really a disgrace or cheating to listen to it via internet as well until he gets it figured out. Thank you very much, Roy. KD2UH, back to the net.
Okay, Rocco, thank you for your input. I don't really see the difference between listening to a repeater, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's a kind of simplex operation. He's listening to me, and I assume he hears me because he's responding to me. So he's getting the reception, but it's the reception on 2 meters for a 2 meter repeater, as opposed to reception on something that's slightly off of the frequency. I mean, yeah, it's possible that propagation conditions happen to change at the exact time that he cut the cables. That's certainly a possibility, but that doesn't really lead to a solution. You can't kind of just manually adjust propagation conditions. So I'm assuming that it's something that's somewhat fixable, and he would prefer to use his radio to do it. So again, I'm saying it wouldn't, you know, I mean, it doesn't cost that much for a 20-foot run of cable and a adapter, and I would experiment, but you know, you could always kind of opt out and use an application. That's a way of going. But you know, since we are amateur radio operators, I thought we'd get a little technical.
Yes, I use Live ATC all the time. Also, I know that's a workaround, but that's not answering the question of you hear Boston, let's say at an S6 before and now at an S1. But I also agree a little bit with the propagation, because once in a while I can hear the air traffic controller. Once in a while, I could barely hear the air traffic controller, and other times, not at all. But before this, it was never on the margins. I am going to get a 20-foot piece of coax, and I am going to try this to see if that's the solution. Also, you have to take into account that the nano VNR, I remember running a test with the nano VNR, and I sure enough had dips at the 2-meter band and dips at the 440, a very clean line. Now the line's all over the place where you don't know what I'm seeing. My instinct tells me that's a bad solder connection, but everything else points to that the coax is the one variable that changed. Well, two variables. The connector, the one connector that I soldered on, and the length. So those are two variables that change with the coax idea, and I'll give that a shot first. If Boston comes in like it used to, I will bow down and bend a knee to you, you high mystic, how do they say it? High mystic leader. I'm trying to think of the honeymooners, raccoon, head of the raccoon lodge. High mystic ruler. Anyway, my second question, technically, is much more complex. Get this one. I signed up for CW Academy. That's an 8-week course in helping you improve CW speed. And what happened was, this is a combined computer and it's really a computer question. My microphone on my laptop is now missing from the operating system. It is so missing that it doesn't even show up in Device Manager. So it's not like I could change, modify, update the driver. It's just not there. It's gone from the computer. So the only workaround, and here's where it becomes incredibly interesting, the only workaround was to use my Bluetooth earbuds, which in talking on Zoom worked perfectly. But now this, you're supposed to be able to not only copy CW off of Zoom, they have to hear you sending CW. Everything else worked except them hearing me send CW through the earbuds, and we could not figure out what is going on. Maybe noise canceling for some reason, but it's a real head scratcher. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, before we kind of go on to this topic, let me just kind of add a little something. If you're at all concerned that there's some screwy thing going on with your transmission line, there is a feature in your, it's VNA, it's a vector network analyzer. It's not an R as in Roger, it's an A as in Alpha. So there is a feature in your nano VNA which is called a time domain reflectometer, which basically sends a signal down your transmission line and it bounces back, and it tells you if there are discontinuities, changes in impedance along the line, and it's very useful in detecting any problems with your transmission line from the connector to the antenna feed. Just go to YouTube, type in nano VNA, type in TDR, time domain reflectometer, and they'll tell you exactly how to set it up, and you can test your coax. It's a much more sophisticated test than using a volt ohm meter for continuity. Did you get that?
at that. You were referring to problem one I've been having. I didn't get it because you didn't identify what you were talking about. But, yeah, I'll do a GDR on it and see if I can find anything. Great solution.
Okay. Getting back to your second question. Number one, I think it would be nice if you made another attempt to rediscover your microphone input. If you went to the vendor of your laptop, if it's still up and available, they usually have system drivers available. So look up the sound devices and try to reinstall your sound device, and you might recover your microphone. That would be the best approach I would suggest for getting back your microphone in the first place. As you mentioned, Bluetooth earpieces are probably optimized for speech, not single-tone signals. So what your particular Bluetooth chip would make of a CW signal is anyone's guess. They tend to be overly sophisticated and, air quotes, smart, which is to say dumb. And so I wouldn't be surprised if there are speech-enhancing circuitry in your Bluetooth that doesn't know what to do with a CW signal. So have you considered simply plugging a microphone into the microphone jack in your computer? You know, usually you can buy a relatively cheap microphone.
I just ordered a combination microphone and camera, a USB microphone and camera. So we'll see what that does. But how would I load in a new device driver when there's no place to load it in? In other words, if you go into Device Manager, under audio, the speaker comes up, the laptop speaker comes up, but there's no input point that comes up. So how do you load in a device driver if it's not, you know, to update, you know, when you're updating devices, it comes up with a choice, you know, update, you can roll back a device driver, you can update one from the latest device downloads on your computer. But how would you put a device driver on your computer if there's no place to do that? Go ahead.
By the way, do you remember what the speaker brand is? I'm willing to bet it's a Realtek.
USL, it is a Realtek. It's a Lenovo laptop.
Okay. The cheap and quick way to maybe get away with it is to update your speaker, because it's the same sound chip. The chip that controls your speaker controls your microphone and all the audio inputs and outputs and DACs and such. So you could try just updating the speaker and see if you happen to bring back your microphone. If not, again, I would go to Lenovo's site. Lenovo is very good. You type in the model number and such, and it will give you a long list of drivers available. You look up the sound driver, you download it, and you just run that executable installation, and that should bring back your microphone unless something very weird has happened. Yes, Leslie?
Yeah, to practically gone the speaker. It goes with the sub menu, which is open sound settings, open volume, and mixer, speaker setup, sound troubleshooting, sound problems. Of course, this is not Lenovo, so you may have a little bit different menu. Now, when you click on open sound settings, it takes you to sound. And then you have your device. You can choose the output device you have on one, or you have more, or you can search for it. and then you can adjust the volume, you can troubleshoot, and you can download the tape driver. But also in Device Manager, if you put the Device Manager right click on it, and you should be able to go to that what you call speaker, which is your sound device, and then it says works properly, but when you go to the right on the sub menu, it is you can upgrade or update the driver or search for the driver. Then other thing is you can have a program as the antivirus programs have that modules included in it. But if you don't have it, you can download the program that is a driver updater, and you can check with it if you have the drivers updated. Thank you very much.
Okay, Wes. Well, I wouldn't advise that personally. I've played around with all these things. I find device driver update software to be very questionable. They tend to let you search for things, but have download things, and then you got to buy something, and it's just as easy to do that yourself, and you don't have to buy it. Like I said, Lenovo is an excellent website. You just type in the model number, and it gives you all the drivers. You download them, you run them. The problem that Rich is having is that he doesn't have direct access in the control panel to a microphone. You know, all that he seems to find is the output speaker. And you kind of repeated what I said, which is try updating the thing that says speaker, and most likely it's a combined driver, and we'll reestablish the microphone inputs and driver levels and such. But if it doesn't, you go to Lenovo's site, you look for sound drivers, you download it, you run it, and that should fix everything, most likely.
WS2RY.
Yes. First, Paul. Then you, David.
What he was talking about, the problem. In other words, if you go to voice recorder, I'm assuming he's got Windows, and, you know, like Windows 10 or something. You go to voice recorder, bring it up, and you should be able to record your voice. You know, without even getting onto Zoom or anything. Make sure the microphone's working that way. I must be missing something, though. I'm sure you did that. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, Paul, the problem appears to be that the registry, that the whole system doesn't seem to recognize that there is an input driver. So if there's no input driver in the control panel, then most likely if you ran any software, it would be deeply confused, and it would either offset to something ridiculous that wouldn't work, or just put up an error message. So the problem, as I perceive that Rich is having, is that his driver entries for a microphone somehow got corrupted and lost, and they're not available to the system at this point. That's why I suggest just reinstalling the drivers, and it should include a proper running driver for the microphone. David, you wanted to say something?
Yes, good evening. What about an external sound card that plugs into the USB port, like a DAC?
Well, I mean, that's kind of gilding the lily. I mentioned to him an external microphone. A lot of times they come USB-based, and they have their own internal DAC drives inside the microphone. And he mentioned that he's going to get a camera that has a microphone. Those have built-in DACs as well. So he's kind of considering and planning to do that as well. But I just thought it would be kind of easier to just fix the initial problem, and then you have more than one way of communicating on your given computer.
Good luck with that. Roy?
Yeah, Rich?
I went one step further.
I have my laptop on just where my lap, and I went one step further. I uninstalled the speaker device driver and then scanned for any new devices, and the speaker is the only one that came back.
Okay, but that's still because you have a corrupt, most likely you have a corrupt driver. So, once again, the quick and dirty one with maybe a 50-50 chance is to update it. It might not help because, again, it might not know how to deal with the corrupt driver in your microphone settings. So, again, go to Lenovo, type in your model, go to drivers, find the sound driver, and run it. I think that will solve it. It shouldn't take you more than about 10, 15 minutes.
Okay. I see also, I don't want to bend the knee too deeply, but the fact that you thought of that the microphone, the chip, for the microphone and the speakers would be the same and therefore, run by the same device driver was a brilliant suggestion. I don't think it worked, but I think it was a brilliant suggestion. Anyway, during a research, it says if your microphone is not detected on Windows 11, try the following steps. And I also tried privacy and security settings, by the way. Update or roll back the audio driver and device manager. Give apps permission, which I already did. Reinstall the microphone driver, which I can't do unless by your manual method. And confirm that the correct mic is chosen. There's a lot more about how to fix microphone not working in Windows 11. But I think I went through, and here's another one, Windows 11 not finding microphone. I will go to Lenovo while I'm listening to the rest of the TechNet and report back before the TechNet is over. So thanks, Roy.
You're welcome, Rich. My pleasure. Yeah, I mean, those other measures are security measures that block the microphone from being used, but it should still be visible in Device Manager. It's just a safety feature that people can't listen in on you because in the bad old days, it was a routine hack that people enabled the microphones, especially on the cameras, that was supposed to be shine a certain color if the cameras were activated. It's very simple to have the hardware turn off the indicator light. So the camera and the microphone would be live, the light on the camera would be off, and people would just kind of tune in and be entertained by watching other people, strange people that they all are. Anyway, I wish you luck. I think that should do it because I've been down this road a couple of dozen times. Realtek is a ubiquitous chipset for sound boards. It's built into motherboards at this point. So most people that I know end up having a Realtek chipset, and the drivers are decent. Not great, but decent. So I wish you luck, and I look forward to good news.
All right. I'm also I'm going to look. I hadn't checked under sound controllers. I'll check that now, and I'll get back to you later in the segment. Thanks, Rick.
Okay. Very good. Once again, I continue to be AC2GS. This continues to be the Limark Technical Net. If anyone has arrived in the last 40-50 minutes after I already made the announcement, if anyone has any questions or topics for comment and wants to have their name on the list for tonight, please hit the push to talk and give me your first name, your call sign, and if it's a question, topic, comment, if it's amateur radio related or not amateur radio related.
WB2AHK.
Yes, Chet, how are you tonight? I hope you're in good spirits.
Yeah, kind of like. Getting back to Rich's listening to aviation and all that, I could comment. Do you have time just to get a couple of thoughts of mine across? Go ahead.
Sure, Chet.
All right, so I like to listen to the aviation band sometimes. There's a bunch of frequencies that you can hear, like in the 136 area, at least for New York area. And it's long range. You can hear planes coming in and taking off from far reaches, hundreds of miles away, and they come in loud and clear. I have like three or four HDs that can pick up the air band. I also have some outside antennas. And hardly ever, for an instance, I'm only 3-4 miles at tops from Kennedy Airport, airline miles, and I could hardly ever hear the control tower, even though I know they're there, on 119.100. Occasionally, I get like a little burst from them, and it's frustrating. I'd like to hear the tower actually talking to the planes. But that's the way it is. They don't run a lot of power, and I guess their antenna is orientated to pointing upward, not at the ground. And that can have a lot to do with it. But I want to get back to the coax for a second. All right, so this is not for Rich, because I'm sure he knows already. He's been soldering coax and all that. But I have bought a lot of coax over the last 10, 15 years, and you got to be real careful. There are really cheap models of coax out there, and some of them are aluminum outer conductors. I would even imagine they even sell some with aluminum center conductors, or a combination of copper and aluminum. And sometimes if you get copper and aluminum, you can even get copper and aluminum outer conductors, and they only give you a few strands of copper, and then the rest of it is aluminum, and it's in the foil, configuration. But you get a couple of strands of copper, real cheap garbage. You have to be careful. I'm not saying Rich did this. I'm just saying for other people listening, you cannot solder. I don't care how many tiny little strands of copper are in there, those cheap cables, but you'll never have any luck soldering to that kind of thing with a foil in it. You need a crimper. And my thoughts on maybe something like this would happen to somebody using a certain kind of coax that was very economical, and they tried to solder to it. You're not going to get a good connection, and maybe you hook an ohms meter and you check both the in and out of the coax to see if you have continuity. Maybe you have an electrical continuity, but you're not really having the RF continuity. So be careful what kind of coax you're buying. There's a lot of junk out there. I suggest Belden cable. Always pretty good. Go ahead.
Okay, Chet, I appreciate what you're saying. A lot of times now, expensive transmission lines are copper-clad steel. I have a center core. So it's not at all unusual for expensive stuff to be just copper-clad instead of pure copper. I don't know what make he had, but, I mean, it was operational before he shortened it. I don't know if you heard the whole story, but he decided it was 20 feet too long, so he shortened it by 20 feet and put a connector on it. He's able to transmit and receive locally on the repeaters. He's able to push power through it. So I tend to doubt that it's that tenuous a connection. Since he put the connector on, he should be able to visualize the condition of the braid. I haven't seen really bad coax cables since Radio Shack's days. The Radio Shack used to rotate and buy the cheapest stuff that they could find. And some of the braids on Radio Shack coax cables were abysmal.
I think some of the cheaper cables are probably useful for CATV use, long run to that. but you got to use a crimper on. And but I believe me, I almost invariably, if I ever run into cable like that, I immediately throw them away in the garbage can. And I haven't been building antennas much lately. I got a whole giant military case full of coax, hundreds and hundreds of feet of coax of various kinds. You got to be careful even on the larger diameter coaxes. They make junky cables for RF, ham radio, transmission wiring and UHF. I think it's more, the smaller stuff is for CATV type things. So, anyway, just be aware, you guys out there, if you see any bargains out there and it's like one-third the price, a quarter of the price of something else that has a brand name, that I hope you have a crimp. Otherwise, you're going to pull your hair out if you have any left, and you'll never be able to grip solder to the coaxial fitting on the PL-259, and even though solder might melt into the coaxial holes going around the circumference of the cable, it doesn't mean it's connecting to the outer shield of the coax. That's all I had to say. Put my two cents in. Go ahead.
Okay, very good. I appreciate your participation, Chet. I like Times Microwave. I have a lot of LMR. I have 400, I have 240, a few other little odds and ends. High quality stuff. I tend to caution people when they're trying, they found a deal on eBay for some Chinese no-name brand, but in large amounts, and they want to get together with other people so that, they don't have to buy a ridiculous length of cable. That you might save money in the short end. It might cost you a lot of aggravation in the long end, depending upon the quality. So I pay the little extra, and I depend upon known brands for their quality. And LMR has served its purpose for many years for me. So I'm a fan of LMR. But yeah, I understand different people have different preferences, and other people just want to save as much of a buck as they can. Again, I think sometimes that's problematic. There are some things that you could try going cheap on, and if it doesn't work out, you throw it away. People do that with microphone elements all the time. You buy 10 Chinese microphone elements. They cost $3, and 7 of them are worthless, and 2 of them are decent, and 1 of them sounds pretty good. So you have to factor all that in. But that's a microphone, not a transmission line that you've mounted someplace and you would like it to stay that way for the foreseeable future. So I thank you once again, Chet.
This big SB, for the people out there, I have a lot of experience over the last 60-something years of buying coax cables and doing UHF installations all over New York City, going on top of buildings, doing repeaters and things like that. In the old days, things were fine. You could call it an LMR 400. But remember that if it doesn't say Times Microwave and you could trace it, I mean, they might say, oh, Times Microwave. They don't usually say Times Microwave. They'll say LMR 400. It means nothing. Who made it? What is it constructed of? Unless it actually comes from Times Microwave. Another thing that's doing happening is batteries. I don't know how many bad batteries. I don't know how to buy a good Duracell battery over the internet. It says Duracell, but how many junky batteries, the AAAs, AAs, geez, 90% of the batteries I've been buying, and I've been using quite a lot of it for the last few years, 5, 10 years, well, not that long, 3 or 4 years, 5 years, are junky. Junk batteries from China, and they have the brand names on them. So it's getting very difficult to buy from sources like China, who clone things and counterfeit things. So I don't know how to buy batteries unless call up Duracell and say, can I buy direct? I don't. Duracell company decides not to make the batteries anymore, and they put the contract out to China. And they get the Chinese batteries, and Duracell company gets the batteries and sells them from their business locations. So You can't even trust batteries anymore. Anyway, I'm yandering too much. 73 is George. Nice talking to you.